Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Dr. Yvonne Lutch. Yvonne is the investment director with Lamb Capital. Yvonne, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christian. And thank you for having me on this podcast. I'm very excited.
Our pleasure. So with that, let's start with Lamb Capital. What's the firm's investment thesis?
So Lamb Capital is short for Lamb Research Capital. And Lamb Research is one of the five biggest semiconductor equipment manufacturers worldwide. Many people know Applied Materials. Sometimes I like to say Lamb Research is the small sister of Applied, or the smaller. But we are a market leader in very specific sectors. We are focusing on etching and deposition and cleaning. And the good news is, like in the semiconductor industry, the smaller the semiconductor chips become, or the smaller the feature become, the more like they go in the third dimension, like in this direction, and the more layers you need. Therefore, the more layers you need, the more Lamb equipment you need. So eventually, it's a very good time in the market to be in the semiconductor space. And we do investments in startups along the whole value chain, from materials, material-related technologies, to products and systems. And of course, semi-equipment is in between there, but it's also about sensors, it's about robotics, sustainability is a very important topic, automation is an important topic. You cannot invest nowadays without saying AI. That touches almost every investment. And other than that, we are a kind of typical minority startup investor with a strategic focus. And we probably come to that later a little bit more.
And what does your day-to-day look like as investment director?
Day-to-day is talking to startups, talking to our business people, what their needs are and how we can help them, reading things, learning things, because as an investor, you are digging into new technologies and new concepts all the time. So you also have to educate yourself to some extent to keep up.
Okay. I'm sure we can devote an entire episode to the macroeconomics trends around chips. But for benefit of our audience who are not as familiar with the space, what are just some of the, so we know demand is there. I think it's probably a safe bet to say that a significant portion of it is driven by artificial intelligence. But what are some of the key macroeconomic themes that are impacting the chip market right now?
Of course, there is like debates about, you know, which countries are working together and where you can deliver equipment or not. Because we are building equipment, we are also dependent on material supply, and this is worldwide. So this is all influencing our market position. But in the large scheme, I don't want to repeat it, but in the large scheme, semiconductors are going to be everywhere, not only in the data center, but only on the what people so call edge. Because of the advancements of AI, generative AI, this will influence our lives, hopefully in a good way, in many, many different areas. But that also means that even more devices, not only your phone and not only your TV, but also other devices become smarter, and they all have some semiconductor chips in them. So the overall large macroeconomic trajectory is growth, which is good. And it is definitely fueled by the advancements of AI, but it's also, it's still consumer electronics. It's also cars or electric vehicles or automated vehicles, even though this is not very trendy today, and investors always like to follow trends or make trends, but it's not going away on the other hand.
And so on the flip side of that, what are some of the key risks that you think about? And then if you can dovetail that into how that influences what you're currently bullish on.
Yeah. I mean, risks are always then if there's a trend, there's almost always also a bubble, specifically in the VC space. And I have been in VC not long enough to see bubbles bursting. And of course, the whole AI data center space, for example, is probably overhyped. And the downside is that there are certain companies, very interesting companies from a technology perspective, and these technologies are needed for the future to make data centers more efficient, more sustainable. But some of these companies are super expensive from an investment perspective. Too expensive for me. For me, it's unthinkable of, you know, how do I get a good return on a hardware technology company that is valued already at $1 billion? Who is buying them for 10 or 100 billion? It's beyond my imagination. So that's the downside. On the other hand, there's many good opportunities. So let's see.
And for the uninitiated, DeepSeek, maybe it isn't a good example. Earlier this year, China-based comes out. In simplest of terms, I understand that the amount of GPUs it needs to consume in order to be as efficient as one of OpenAI models is materially lower. Is that what you're referring to in terms of advancements in the technology that could result in lower entry points?
Well, that's where the big bubble is. That is maybe bursting, maybe not bursting, maybe we are all wrong. But it's definitely a race, and sometimes races are races to the bottom, right? Especially with these large language models, they are about to become more efficient, and there might be another competitor beating OpenAI by I don't know how many times. It's possible. I think it's possible, but I'm actually kind of observing that space. But since we are not necessarily investing, like not big checks in software, this is like not really my problem. But even hardware technology companies, where, you know, in hardware for me, it's like there's a piece of hardware, it has a certain value just because of its cost of goods sold. And then it has a profit margin, and then it's getting sold. And there's a market with a specific need and numbers. And you can project these numbers. But then there's a valuation where I'm like, this doesn't make sense. With software, it's a little bit harder to make all this in a logical row, but definitely there's hype. And the thing is the race. The race makes me a little bit nervous in software technologies, because then, like, you know, huge profit margins and huge valuation multiples can go away.
Well, I'd love, before we get into then what you are currently focused on, if we take a step back, I'd love to know what your professional career progression was leading up to, Lam.
Well, if you would have asked me probably exactly 10 years ago where I would be today, I would have asked you whether you are crazy. So more or less like probably the day, like maybe it was May, June, sorry, we're already in June. Maybe it was June 18, maybe it was May 12, I don't know exactly. So I was working in a corporation back in Germany, very corporate, very operational job. But I told my leadership management team that I want to do something else. I want to go abroad. I want to serve the company in a different country. And then I got a call from HR, and they told me, Yvonne, we have a very interesting job for you in Silicon Valley. And I'm like, Silicon Valley? Seriously? What am I going to do there? I have no idea about startups and innovation, and they were like, you figure it out. And that was it. And I mean, and this was like a life-altering moment, that they asked me, that I applied for the job and I got the job. And I came to Silicon Valley more or less 10 years ago. And I did not start in venture. I started in business development and innovation scouting. But since I was working with startups and I was looking after startups and talking to them, I had also to learn how venture works, at least on a higher level, to understand, how mature they are, will they survive another year or not. And that made me very, very excited about venture capital. And then I needed to become a venture capitalist. And fast forward, I became a VC. I did VC or corporate VC for 7 years for Bosch Ventures, this German company that gave me the chance to move to US in the first place. And I'm very thankful for that. And then half a year ago or 8 months ago, I joined LAM, because I thought the time is right to jump ship, to leave the corporate behind I have been working with for 22 years, to do something new, and to join LAM, because semiconductor is currently a good place to be.
And I have a bunch of questions, but we have international audience members. A number of people have the opportunity to travel throughout the world. I have to ask, how does the U.S. and maybe in particular the Silicon Valley culture compare to Germany?
It's very interesting, because I traveled a lot to Asia with my last job back in Germany, and I was actually almost certain that I would end up in China or in Japan or in Korea. These were the countries I was at that time preferring, because my customers were there, all my international interfaces were there, and then they offered me a job in US. US was not attractive to me, because I thought, well, it's like Europe, right? It's just further away. I couldn't be more wrong, even though we look the same. And that's the difference with Asia, right? I mean, it sounds awkward, but people look different, and then you think they are different. Here, I mean, people look the same, but they are not. I mean, the culture is very, very different. In a good way, not always in a good way, but very often in a good way, specifically for innovation, for startups and VC.
Well, and so let me build on that. So there's, particularly in Silicon Valley, there's a perception that it has its own subculture.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as it pertains to investing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there truth? Is deal momentum extremely fast? Do you find that it's really network driven? You know, what's your experience been being in the Bay in the last couple of years?
So I was amazed how human connection driven the whole business is. I mean, after all, every business comes back to human relationships, but specifically in venture, the good deals, you don't find them in the internet or on PitchBook. You find them because you have friends, they are talking to friends, and then you talk to these friends and you meet them at random events. And so I had to build my own network, which was a little bit intimidating, but also a lot of fun. But I was impressed and also surprised how network and human relationship driven the business is. And that's where Silicon Valley has its unique advantage. Not because the people are smarter, or I mean, smart people are everywhere, but the density is the distinguishing thing. The density just of VCs, of law firms, of the whole support system, financial institutions, investment banks, or whatever, they all support the startup ecosystem, the accelerators, the universities, everything. There was a person, he told me once, Yvonne, Silicon Valley is two kind of people, or two groups of people, the startups and the supporting ecosystem, including Starbucks, even though it's not from here. So The thing is, the density is so high. You know, there's a lot of universities, accelerators, but for sure the money, right? Power eventually gets to some extent where the money is. And people come here to fundraise, even though they don't start their company here, they come here to fundraise, and then they probably move their company to here, or at least they have some sales representation because a lot of customers are here. I mean, the FANGs are here. Again, the density makes it a unique place.
Makes good sense. Okay, so fast forward, it's now your investment director at Lam. What are you currently bullish on, and what has your attention?
Yeah. So again, I mean, the AI data center is, you know, undebatable. It's there, it's coming, it's growing. There are many areas where we can contribute and where we want to invest in new technologies. And the thing is with data centers, I mean, they work, they exist, but they are too power hungry. And you have to mitigate that. And eventually, it is about moving data more efficiently from A to B, whether this is within the rack or rack to rack or between data centers. It is how you bring power to the chips. Like power conversion from like 400 volts coming into the data center to 48 volts distributed up to 1 volt or zero, less than 1 volt. That's the power, the voltage that is used to power the chips. Power conversion is a super interesting space, and the other is like, you know, interconnections, interconnectivities, and people are talking about optics now, not only between data center but also within the data center, because copper comes to its limits. How much power it can deliver at what energy that is power that is lost. So these are super interesting areas. But then also on the, you know, on the technologies area, everyone is talking about light out fabs, like semiconductor fabs will run fully autonomously. So that means that our equipment, our machines have to become self-aware. Like a tool is not a stupid tool anymore. It becomes its own robot. Like it can maintain itself. It can change. It change like spare parts by itself. And it also observes, you know, how well it functions, preventive maintenance, blah, blah, blah. So all of this, the automation and the robotics part for our own equipment is also a super interesting space. And then also sustainability, as I mentioned. One is like how our products can make the world and the data center more sustainable, like consuming less power, less energy, but also how we can make the production of the chips in the first place more efficient, like how we reduce the power consumption of our own equipment and how we get, we use less harmful chemicals, or we, if we have to discard them, we do this in a sustainable way. The whole thing is the whole value chain is therefore is important to us, and that's areas I'm looking at.
Okay. So you identify a potential investment. It fits the thesis. What does due diligence look like for you?
Yeah, so since we are and I want to emphasize on this, we are a strategic investor. We don't invest only for financial return. We also want to see a strategic relevance, and that means I want the business units to be, or the product groups to be, excited about that company, and they have an idea how to work with them. So I spend considerable amount of time with my business counterparts at Lam to figure out how are we going to work with that company. If we figure that out, the due diligence, on the other hand, is like very similar to any financial VC. We still want to see, you know, what is the position of the startup in the market? How does the competitive landscape look like? What makes them unique? How does the business model look like? What is the market projections, the market overall, and how big can they grow in the market, with the market? You know, the team, you know, you can never overemphasize how important the team is, how important the CEO is. The leadership team, other investors, you know, how cheap is the company? How expensive are they? You know, do we see a reasonable exit in a couple of years or not? All these things are the typical due diligence questions you have to answer for yourself.
And what stage do you find that you're typically investing in? And will
Yeah,
you
so we are to some extent stage agnostic, but I would say the sweet spot is somewhere between series seed and maybe an early B. Yeah.
And will you lead?
We do lead in selective cases, I would say, if we really think the company is so super strategic and they really need our help that we even lead, then we do that. In some other cases, we think it is better if another financial VC takes the lead because we don't want to paint the company like as a LAM subsidiary.
Interesting.
Because as a larger corporate, you always have to be cautious whether you are helping or hurting the startup with your brand name and leading a deal. And it can sometimes rather hurt. And then we are cautious and tell the startup, we think it's a better idea if we don't lead, but we are happy to help you with introductions to find a good financial lead.
And for the benefit of our audience, why could there be a perception that it's a negative?
Because they can scare away competitors or put, I mean, if it's a super direct competitor, then we probably want them to stay away, but there are like spaces that are pretty close, but like not the same. And people perceive, oh, they are working with LAM, so they don't want to work with us. And that can scare potential customers away.
Got it.
And also other investors. Unfortunately, there's also still a perception of strategic VCs, CVCs. They don't know what they are doing. They don't have any financial expertise. They price companies too high, or they make, you know, funny terms. I don't think that's the case. I think that's a rumor from a distant past. But we have to be cautious, and we don't want to hurt the companies, because if we really want to work with them, that wouldn't help us either if we hurt them.
Sure. I want to talk about the scope of support. Before we do, you mentioned seed. Will you invest pre-revenue?
We do invest pre-revenue, and we did invest in seed rounds, yes.
And is there generally, because there's patents in place or because the founders have a unique set of technical skills?
Yeah, so the patent thing is a thing, right? On the one hand, we want to see the patents. On the other hand, we also know that if it's a very, very like hot space, others will find a way around these particular patents. If they have a similar solution technology, they will find ways around it. So they are important and they are not important. On the one hand, we want to see them, because if they don't have any patents and they're developing hardware technology, then it's like, that's also odd. But speed is actually, after all, speed and relationships are after all more important. Like the leadership team, and it comes back to the team, do they have the right advisors? Do they have experienced people in the leadership team who help them open doors? Because it's, you know, it's always a B2B investment we do. So these tiny startups, they have to have ways to find, or they already have established connections to their customers and into the ecosystem. And that is, I think, more important than just the patents.
My experience, based on my experience, I would tend to agree. Okay, so check is cut. What's the degree of support that LAM supports its investments?
As I said, as much as we can. That's why we invest in the first place. We have several portfolio companies where we became and are becoming a customer, and like a substantial customer, which is super. I mean, that's actually the best gift we can give any startup, and that's even more worth than the money we are putting in the company. And we're not writing super big checks, because we know, like, the check is more like, This tells the market that we vetted the company, the technology, but becoming a customer, that's the best thing we can do. In other areas, we can co-develop something together with the company, or specifically if it's like in the, like in our space, like an equipment play, we can actually help the company to build the real equipment. Why should a startup reinvent the wheel? They have a piece of technology, and that is probably super crucial, and they should deal with that. But like a big metal housing, these things, I think we are experts in that, and we can help the company also to scale their business in a much more sustainable way than reinventing the wheel.
You know, as I listen to you, I think of myself, if I were to think of myself as a founder, I mean, I'm actively pursuing a CVC for all the reasons you just said. You know, I think
Yes.
founders know that sales are crucial, but if you
Yes.
can be strategically aligned with an investor on your cap table, you increase the odds of your success. I am curious, we've been talking a lot about hardware. How often or what percentage of the portfolio are pure software plays?
I think we made like almost 40 investments over the time of our existence, and if I recollect this correctly, maybe less than a handful of pure software companies. It's not a lot. I think there is still some good software opportunities out there. I'm also looking after them, but just because of our legacy and history, LAM overall is feels more comfortable with hardware-related deals.
And do you, I mean, that makes great sense. Yvonne, it's a great, very informative podcast. We're close to wrapping up, but before we do, I have a fun go-to question I enjoy asking, and it's a retrospective. And so, if you had an opportunity to go back, however far back that you'd like, have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
Be braver, be bolder, and be less intimidated.
Do you?
That's a very personal thing. When I came to Silicon Valley, there were all these like big names VC, and they were all like so successful. And I mean, some people are just personally also very wealthy for different reasons. And I was like this unknown person from a little village in Germany. But it doesn't matter. Eventually, it doesn't matter. You have to build your own network, but you have to be brave to do that. You have to get out there. You have to leave the door. I mean, I did that, but do this even more. Like, also, like having the opportunity, and thanks, Christian, for giving me the opportunity talking on these podcasts and like being out there. You have to be a little brave to do that. Not very much because you're so nice, but all these things contribute to success. So be brave and not be intimidated.
You know, I think it's brilliant advice. You know, there's the and I'm not gonna even attempt it, but there's the old Roosevelt quote of being the person in the arena. You know, it's not the critic who counts, and it's hard to put yourself out there, but I think the next thing I ask is, what's your downside? Everyone has to figure it out at some point.
Yeah.
So totally agree. I would love to also give you an opportunity to give a shout out to anyone in your career who's had a material impact on your success. Whoever they may be, is there anyone you'd like to thank?
There are too many people to name out a single person, but I mean, I got tons of supporters within Bosch throughout my career, and the people, for example, who believed in me to send me to US, or they gave me the chance at least to come here. But also, like, I mean, my current employer, LAM, right? They also gave me the opportunity. And then there's so many people, as I said, when I came here, when I go to these random networking events, and then you talk to people, and then they introduce you to someone else, and this introduction might be very valuable. You never know, right? Your support system is probably much bigger than you think, but there's not a single person. It's the village, right?
Well, I agree. If you were if someone asked me something similar, I think I would say the same thing. I my sense.
Maybe my husband.
Okay. Hey.
He gave up everything in Germany and just joined me on my journey and the adventure. I mean, and that's still, unfortunately, a pretty rare case. Very often it's the other way around, like the wife follows her husband. So I'm very proud of my husband and I'm very thankful that he took this adventure with me.
What's his name?
Klaus, very German. I brought him from Germany.
There you go. Shout out to Klaus. Great job. I love it. It's funny. I'm sure we would find people we could have a debate with, but I would tend to agree. I like the idea of paying it forward, helping out when I can, because it isn't. I don't know that it's hard, but it's not necessarily easy. Per se. So yes, anyone who will take a time, I think, to help someone else without looking to get anything out of it, kudos to them. I agree.
Yes.
Yvonne, thank you so much for your time. If there are any member of our audience who'd like to get a hold of you or learn more about LAM, how can they find you?
You find me on LinkedIn. I think there's only one Yvonne Lutsch there. You find me on our LAM Capital. I think it's lam-capital.com website. I'm out there.
Fantastic. And again, Yvonne, thank you for the benefit of our audience. Dr.
Thank
Yvonne,
you, Christian. Thank you so much.
my pleasure, investment director of LAM Capital. And this has been another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinTrat Management. Thank you for joining us. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you are a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.